A husband is one. The second part of the intensive school of the master, the Nasa Bahama here, we have marriages, and then a husband is. Now we're going to look at what a wife is and what a child is. What do you think a wife is? Yes?
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay. Now, what do you think a wife is? We really didn't cover all the possibilities of the husband, but what do you think a wife is? A wife perhaps should be spelled differently. A wife should be spelled G-L-U-E. A wife should be spelled glue. A wife is that which keeps a marriage functioning in its perfect divine order. Now, how does a wife keep a marriage functioning in its perfect divine order? You thought he was going to escape being seen on the picture there as he had his back in there.
But,
you see, a wife is the glue that keeps a marriage together. Now, why do we call a wife the glue that keeps a marriage together? We say that because a wife is always the balancer. A wife is always the one who takes the blame for anything and is untouched by it. Somebody comes in and says, "Why did you leave that in the driveway? I ran over it with a car." And the wife said, "I'm sorry. Shouldn't have done that. I'll know better next time." And she wasn't the one who did it. She wasn't the one who did it. One of the children did it, or the husband did it. But she knows that if she takes the blame, it's over. The discussion's over. There's nothing more to be disturbed about. It's all clear, and it's all perfect. And you see, to do that takes a lot of courage, doesn't it? Could you do that? Not too easy, is it? You see, we are of the opinion that we have to tell the truth. We have to tell the truth all the time. And while it's true, we have to tell the truth, and we have to always speak what we believe. We can sometimes take blame for something that we didn't do when it's going to ease the situation. If it's going to be fireworks, if one person takes the blame, and it's not for another. The mother is teaching to her children, hey, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I take the blame. Now, we don't ever want to have the thought be that you can lie. And that, of course, is a lie. But we don't ever want to have that be acceptable. But it's a matter of, are you willing to carry the load yourself? And it's like the little boy. He was going to the orphanage, and he was bringing this other little boy along. And he got up in front of the orphanage, and he was carrying the other little boy. And the father came to the front of the orphanage and said, "Here, son, let me help you carry him." And he says, "He's not heavy, father. He's my brother." Now, you see, when we are willing to have such deep love and respect for all members of our family, then they're not heavy. They're our brother. They're our sister. They're someone that we really care about, someone that we love with all of our heart. And we would be perfectly willing to take the blame. Now, many people, they have the feeling that to take the blame is a tough thing. And it is a tough thing. But I'm talking about getting harmonious reaction in a marriage, in a relationship. How does a wife bring about the glue binding quality that she brings into a marriage? How does she do that? Well, she does that by having unconditional love. And unconditional love is what every member of the family should have, but the wife generally has it more than the others. And the reason the wife has unconditional love more than the others is that the wife is able to be untouched. She's able to be untouched by the things that are going on much better than anybody else. Now, why is she able to be untouched? Well, because She's been trained that she's a girl and she's weaker and she's incapable of doing anything. She's incapable of accomplishing great goals and achieving great possibilities. And is this true? Is that true? She's not taught that she can't do things. People will tell her, though. But does that stop her? Does that stop her? No. What did Anna do? Anna grew up in a community, in a society, where it wasn't necessary to go into medicine, wasn't necessary to go into these things. But why do you think Anna went into medicine? Why do you think she went into the special medicine using non-normal drugs and heavy-duty things? Why do you think she went into that? Did she go into that because she wanted to heal people? Do you think she went into that because she wanted to prove that she's a very good, smart woman? Or did she go into that because she wanted to make a lot of money?
Hmm?
Why did she go into it?
She enjoyed it because that's what she enjoys. Because that's what she enjoys doing.
Ah! Ah! The answer. That's what she enjoys doing. Now, when you do what you enjoy doing, then you don't have to fight anybody, do you? You just do that which comes naturally for you to do. Now, are you going to be outstanding when that's your reason? Yes? Yes. You're going to be outstanding when that is your modus operandi, when that is the manner in which you operate yourself. You are going into this because it's fun. Now, Jamie is telling us that she has a stomach ache. And so you as a person who works with alternate medicines, you say, Jamie, alternate medicines are many things. Jamie, what's your problem? And Jamie says, I have a tummy ache. And you say, Jamie, why did the children pick on you today in school? And she says, well, what do you mean? Well, why did somebody make you unhappy at school today? Well, how do you know someone made me unhappy? Well, because all stomach aches come basically from some mental attitude first. Now, who was it who was angry at you? Well, I don't want to say. What did they do to you? Well, they told me that I look stupid. And, well, what do you mean they told you look stupid? Well, they said that I look more beautiful than anybody else in the class. Well, is that a reason to become upset? Well, they didn't say it nicely. They said it not nice. And, Jamie, why did you let that bother you? Well, because it was true. What do you mean it was true? Well, I was acting superior to the rest of the kids in the class, and all of a sudden, a couple of them came up to me and said, you think you're pretty snooty, don't you? You think you're pretty good. You think you're better than the rest of us. Well, I just don't know about that. And you see, then Jamie is getting balanced within herself. Now, what sort of medicine did Anna use on it? She used it. She used a mental medicine on you, didn't she? Did she give you a drug?
No.
Did she give you any allopathic things?
No.
In any way? All she did was say to you, okay, what seems to be the problem? And she went into the problem. Now, if you say, well, I ate too much candy at school, she might give you some bacon soda, you know, to help you balance that out. But no, when it was just having something unhappy that happened to you in school, she was able to go right to the cause. Now, what would a regular medical doctor do for you if that were the problem? Would he help that same way?
No.
What would he do?
He'd give you a drug.
He'd give you a pill, wouldn't he? He'd give you a drug. Now, why would he give you a drug?
That's what they do. They
That's all that. He knows how to do. Now, when you go to your psychiatrist, what does the psychiatrist do?
Mental.
Hmm?
Mental. Mental?
Drugs? No. Your psychiatrist will give you mental attitudes and drugs. I mean, they're MD and a psychiatrist, so they got to get it in. Now, I'm not trying to say that psychiatrists and doctors and all these things are silly, but if you are a singer and someone has a heartache, what do? You sing them a song, don't you? Yeah. And if your dog is my dog sometimes gets kind of, he feels sad because he wants to do something and he can't do it. And so I'll sing to him. And I'll sing him some stupid little song that I make up. And all of a sudden, he's just happy wagging his tail and cleaning off the tables with his tail. But he's just happy as can be. But you see, when you work with people where they are, and the wife does this, she works with people where they are as a balancer. And what's the first thing the mother says to her children when they come home from school?
How are you? How was your day?
How was your day? How was your... Show an interest in them. Now, do you think that they feel loved and cared for? If mother would say, go wash your hands. You know, you've been playing out in the dirt. Go jump in the shower. Go do this. Go do that. What do they feel? Unloved. Yeah. Now, what about the rest of us? When people come in our life and treat us so crassly and openly, do we feel unloved too? You see, to have love, we give love. If we would like to be loved, we give the demonstration of being loving. It always starts and ends with us. And when we give love, do we need love from anybody else?
No.
When we give love, we don't need love from anybody else. Do we get it? Yes. But we don't need it. We don't wait for it. We don't depend on it. Because we just give, because that's our nature to give, and be loving. This is what we're all about. Now, a wife has as her primary purpose to be the cement in the marriage, the glue in the marriage that keeps it together. Because the wife is always the perfect example of an untouched being, an unconditionally loving being. Unconditionally loving is something that all of us would love to learn. But how do we learn to be unconditionally loving? We learn to be unconditionally loving by just giving love without expecting anything in return. Have you learned to do that? Yes. And are you polishing that gem of unconditional love? Yes. And do you think that Teddy is learning unconditional love from your unconditional loving attitudes about yourself and your world? Yes, very much. And Teddy, do you think that Jamie and Anton are learning unconditional love from the unconditional love you have learned from Anna?
Yes, and from myself, yes.
I'm sorry?
Yes, and from myself, Billy.
And for yourself.
And from myself, and for myself. Yes, they're learning unconditional love.
I see. You couldn't leave well enough alone there, huh? That's important. That's important. You see, when you're giving a compliment, you try to keep yourself out of it when possible, because if you have to bring yourself in, then that means that you feel that you're not being recognized as being loving and so forth. You know what I mean? You want to stay away from doing that, because on campus, I would say, oh, yes, close the door, and then the kids on camp, I was just thinking of doing that. I was just thinking, they weren't thinking of doing that. They thought of doing it after I said to do it, but they weren't thinking of doing it before, and they wanted to get credit in there by saying, I was just thinking of doing it. Well, we have to be careful we don't do that, because if that is the reason that we're doing things, then we are getting ourselves into a lot of trouble, because we're always looking for compliments. We're always looking for people to think that we're just wonderful. No. That can be a negative situation, and it can be positive. But what is it for you? Now, a wife is the cement. A wife is the glue that keeps everything in order. that keeps everything harmonious and fantastic. And if you recognize that the wife is that, then you will do everything you can to encourage her to do it more and more and more. What is a child? What is a child? Is a child a person that does things like that? Is a child that asks for a drink of water? Is a child a person that lives in that state of consciousness? You think so? Anton? Anton?
No, not only that. No.
There's a bottle on the table with some juice in. Would you like to bring it here for me? Thank you. Good man. Good man. Thank you. Now, how is the child in this relationship? Have you thought about that? How is a child in this relationship? We are marriages where two people are being together because they enjoy each other's company. A husband is someone who cares for the family and is the strength, if you will, of the family, the support of the family, the one that can always be depended on to be loving and helpful under all circumstances. A wife is the glue or the cement of the family, where her unconditional love, which by itself is big, her unconditional love is universally fantastic. Now, these are great things. These are great things, but now what is a child? Did you ever see a child?
No.
Did you, Dad?
Yes.
Uh-huh. You ever see a child, Anton?
Yeah.
Yeah. Jamie, you ever see a child?
Yes.
Okay. Now, this is what women do with a child. The child looks up at the mother or at anybody, and what happens to the people? They melt. They just melt. They just feel, oh, isn't that sweet? Isn't that wonderful? Now, if a child yammers and cries and hollers and screams, the little ones, you know, you leave them alone. Some mothers go pick them up and cuddle them and try to make them quiet. But they're cuddling them to make them quiet. Shut up, quiet up, shut up. But the other ones who are cooing, and you look at them, you pick them up and you don't try to quiet them. You love them because they are so lovable. You love them because they are love themselves, you see? And when you're love itself, then you're fantastic. However, are you love yourself? Are you the baby that makes the coo? The baby that is always good and nice and wonderful? Or are you the baby that's kind of owly and always crying and yammering? Which one are you? If you are the baby that is always loving, you create in your world a loving circumstance, right? You create people who want to hold you. You create people who want to be in your presence. We've been talking all afternoon now, and I haven't heard one peep out of the kid. Where do you keep him in the bedroom? It's a long ways away. No, he's in the basket right behind my chair here. What? And he's so quiet? And you go over and look at the kid, biting his toes, you know, playing there, happy as can be. My gosh. What a wonderful child. Does being quiet and self-content make you a wonderful child? Well, perhaps it does. So, how do we have a child that is quiet and self-content and a wonderful child? How do we have it, Anton?
Loving the child. Giving the child the love that you want to expect from the child.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. We give the child love that we want to have back from him. Now, do you give the child love because you want it back to him, or you give the child...
Give the child love because your love is unconditional.
Like yourself, right. Mm-hmm. Now, what if the child doesn't give back the love? Do you still love him?
Yes.
Yeah. Why do you love a child even if he doesn't give love back to you? Why is a child loving in your world even if you don't even know about it? You see, whoever you are is whoever you create that child to be. If you are a loving person, you're going to create a loving child in your presence. If you are a gnarly person, you're going to create a gnarly child. Now, many women who have children who have colic and other things, they say, oh, what am I going to do? Oh, dear, dear. And you really shouldn't go to the child and seek medicine for the child. You should go to the mother and find out why Jamie had trouble in school, you know? You should go to the mother and find out what's going wrong in her world that she is creating her child to have the coop or to have unhappiness about it in any way. Now, I'm saying this subtly and I'm saying this strongly. What about us? When we, the husband, the wife, or the children, are not getting along, what do? We just cut them off? We just send them away? We just say, hey, no way, we don't want you anymore? Or do we say, okay, all right, Anna, what you're just a little owie this week. What seems to be the trouble? And Anna says, get off my back, I don't want to talk about them. Well, Anna, what seems to be the trouble? You normally are a very loving, gentle, kind person, but this week you've just been sort of uptight about something. I don't want to talk about it. And I say, well, Anna, what did they do to you that you didn't want to talk about it? Well, they took away my desk chair. What do you mean they took away your desk chair? And they gave me a new desk chair. Well, why should that make you so upset and so uptight? Well, the new desk chair is not as comfortable as the other one I had. Well, that's interesting, but why don't you go and talk to them? Well, they don't want to listen to me. They don't want to hear anything I've got to say. Well, you could still go and talk to them. You could still go and talk to them. They might have something. I will not do that. And, of course, you see, you're against having anything happen because if it happens, then you have nothing more to complain about. And sometimes having something to complain about is very important for us. And this is very true. Now, a child doesn't do that. A child, you put them out in the playpen, and they play, the happiest can be. The neighbor children come over and watch him, and they say, can I go play with him? He looks like he's having such a good time in there, playing with his little tiny toys that he has. And the mother has to say, no, no, you're big boys. You go do something else. He's a little boy. And you might not know how to handle a little boy. You might treat him in such a way that he would, you know, not stay happy. And you might hurt him in some way. We have to know these things, you know. I have this golden retriever I told you about. He's big. And when he jumps up on you, you go over. I have to tell children, now be careful of that guy. He loves you, but he's big and he'll knock you down. He'll knock you down not because he doesn't like you, but because he just is a child yet. He's 9 months old. He's not yet fully grown to know all the rules yet. So be careful. And I took him into the vet to have a thorn pulled out of his leg, which was maybe about an inch and a half long, really deeply in there. And he had to wear an Elizabethan collar to keep from licking the wound so it could heal. And in the vet's office, the little girl came over as I was giving him a biscuit, you know. Can I give him one, too? Can I give him one? Sure, sure. But just remember, he doesn't know how big he is, so don't be in a position to be knocked down and have a wall behind you. And so she did that. And she fed him the biscuit, and she was just so happy, and he was so happy. But, you see, she was in charge. She was in charge. And you have to, you know, see, don't get near the dog. He'll knock you down. Don't do this. That'll happen. And the minute you start putting all those no's in there, it makes it a frightful thing rather than an understandable thing. And so the little girl, she said, now, back up. I'm giving you this biscuit. You know, and she put it way out here so he couldn't jump on her and get to her. But you see, that's wisdom. That's wisdom that comes from gentle teaching, gentle caring. And a child is a very wonderful and a very fantastic thing for us all to experience. But children come of many ages. Now, you've seen how the little child reflects what we are, and how the child's health reflects what the mother thinks. And when we realize that the child's health reflects what the mother thinks, then we have to really be looking at the mother to be very careful. Now, what are you guys doing to each other? What do we do in our family here, in our life? Do we play this game of giving a child a cough because we have a cough, we have the croup, because we have a mental attitude? Or do we see this as one of the most glorious things in the world? This house, as I traveled around the country, one of the important things I do before I leave any house, usually when I first arrive, is go through every single room in the house and go through every closet, go through every drawer and bless every one of them. Surround it with the pure white light of love. I'm not interested in what's in the drawers and what's in the closets and all that stuff, or whether the house is orderly or not orderly. I go through every bit of the house and I bless it. I did this when I stopped off in London the other day. And as I went to the home of this lady, she had just moved from an apartment into her own flat now. And furniture was in boxes, and it was just a real royal mess. But it was her home, and I wasn't there that long, so I had to do it right away. So I went with her to every room, opened up every place. And the man who lived upstairs in exactly duplicate of the apartment, he was down there too, and he was telling us what we were looking at. So we knew what all the drawers were and all the things were. And I went through the whole house, and 6 times since I was there, maybe about 3-4 months ago, 6 times she has called on the phone to tell me how much it means to her that her house was blessed, how every room of her house is falling perfectly into place, how everything that she's doing in her house is harmonious and wonderful, how her little baby that I baptized is so fantastic and so glorious and so wonderful, and then how her aunt, you know, loves to come over to her house and wants to get me back over there again to give some more seminars in the hospitals in London than I was there. But you know, when you bless your house, you don't know the impact that it's going to have. You don't know the things that's going to happen, but it's going to happen. Now, Teddy, did you bless every inch of this house before you finished it, before you moved in?
Yes, I did.
Huh?
Yes, I did.
And what sort of a blessing did you give it when you moved in? What did you say? You can make it up if you want to.
Yeah, this house is filled with peace and harmony and love. This house is filled with peace and harmony and love.
Yes?
Yes, that is what's my blessing in each room.
And? Every person who comes into this house comes in with peace, harmony, and love.
Yes.
Every person who lives here is filled
with peace, harmony, and love.
It sounds monotonous, but it's good. But it's good. But it's powerful.
Yes.
Now, anything else that's in here? Do you have any ants or any crickets or any snakes or any spiders or any lizards?
Yeah, I have spiders, but I like them.
That part's okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And they are filled with what?
Peace, harmony, and love.
That's great. That's great. Now, is there anybody in this house who is not filled with peace, harmony, and love?
Everybody in here is filled with peace, harmony, and love.
And everybody who comes in here?
And everybody who comes in. Even my customers, yes.
Even my customers. Especially my customers.
Especially my customers.
With check in hand.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, now, Is your daughter peace, harmony, and love?
Yes, she is.
Is she the epitome of it?
Yes, she is the epitome of it.
Is your son the epitome of peace, harmony, and love?
Yes, Anton is the epitome of peace, harmony, and love.
Is Princess Diane here, your fabulous Anna wife, is she peace, harmony, and love?
She is. Anna is peace, harmony, and love. Filled with peace, harmony, and
not
love.
Not Princess Diana.
Anna.
But you can understand that? No. What do you think? You say the same thing? But your enthusiasm is, you know, Anton, why did you do that?
Do what?
Why did you bite her tongue? Why did you take your mama's tongue?
Me?
Yeah, you. Come on, a little bit of volume there. Are you peace, harmony, and love?
Yes, I am.
Now, a little more.
Yes, I am.
A little more.
Yes, I am.
Now, do you believe in yourself?
Yes.
Are you a beautiful, worthy person?
Yes.
Are you successful in anything you do?
Yes.
Are you loved and desired by everyone in your profession and in your world and in your community and in your family?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Yeah, thank you. But, you see, it's hard for me to impress how important this is, but we, if Anton over here were sitting on his chair and you saw that one of the legs was falling off and he didn't see it quite yet, you'd say, Anton, stop, Anton! The checker, and of course he'd go flat on his back. But could you leap up and go over and grab him in your arms and say, Anton, your chair was falling down. Now, mainly, Anton, watch it, the chair is falling down, you know. And that's good. But to leap over there and grab him, my son, I don't want you to get poked by that chair. His legs are coming off. You see, a child is something very special. A child is something very important. A child can be the love center of a family, and it can be also the division of a family. And this happens many times, where the mother gives so much love to the child, and not enough to the husband or to the rest of the children, and the whole family sort of becomes discombobulated, you know. And we have to be very careful about that, that it's universal and it's the same. We had two young children at the ranch last week, and that was Gertrude Suter's grandchildren, Jerome and Sabrina. Well, now, Jerome had been there many times, and he's always orderly. He's a fabulous boy in every way. Sabrina is her first time. And she had to be into everything and try everything. And she was a good kid. But when I was speaking at the table and giving talks and so forth, I had to be very careful to cover Sabrina and cover Jerome equally. Because it would be so easy to be prominent for one or the other. Because, you know, that's how much can you say about things at one given time. But you always have to say them equally about them. Just like Anton and Jamie here, you got to say things equal about them, because otherwise Jamie will say, he doesn't love me, you know, he doesn't give me any time. And this is true for parents too. Parents have to give equal time. It's just like in political campaigns on the television and radio, you have to give equal time to every candidate. You can't just take your particular political candidate and give them time but not the other person. And then you get into trouble too. Because if there are five other candidates that are running also, they have to have equal time. And that can be quite expensive for the television studio or the radio. But it's always good too. It's always important. A child is something very important, and if we can use the techniques that we use on a child to have them be whole and perfect, to have them live happy and harmonious lives on ourselves and on each other, we find that many of the problems that come up in life are solved very easily. So now let's look at what a home is. We talked about it for a moment there. And we said that a home is where we are living. A home is what we bless. Every house I went into, I blessed it. And one house I went into in Switzerland one time, I kept coming to the child's room. And the child's room seemed to have a black curtain hanging over it, you know, symbolically. And the rest of the house wasn't bad. But that room was terrible. And so I said to the parents, I said, there's something wrong with that room. There's something very, very wrong with that room. Well, as the room was searched, and as the room was checked over while I was there, their grandmother had painted a picture in her mental unhappiness in black and red of a witch, you know, and it was from Grandma, prominently up on the wall, bigger than this mirror here, and that was in there. So whenever the kid went, he didn't want to go to bed. He didn't want to go into his room and go to bed. He didn't know why, but he didn't want to go. And that picture was hanging in there. And so I told the father, I said, okay, now you take the kid down and buy him an ice cream. And so the father took the kid out, bought him an ice cream, didn't ask why. And then I said to the mother, now you take that picture and do whatever you can to it, but get rid of it. Destroy it. That picture has such vibrations in it that are tremendously hard for that kid. He can't sleep at night. And so they took the picture out, and she had another picture in her closet. It was of a clown. And she put the other picture of the clown up, and he didn't even notice it. Nobody even noticed it. But he went right to bed and right to sleep and slept sound. Never troubled again. You see, we sometimes don't realize how in our home, if we have negative words, if we have pictures that are not harmonious with what we're doing. Now, your pictures in here are all kind of interesting, but this is a professional home. There's very few knickknacks here that indicate who lives here. Now, even in your room, you got some pictures on the wall and so forth, but you want to represent your room and your home as who you are, with a few little knickknacks that represent you. Now, the knickknacks don't have to be Dresden dolls and stuff like that, but they can be whatever it is that pleases you. Well, what are your knickknacks, would you say, Anton? Do you have any knickknacks?
This knick-knack.
What's a knickknack? This is a knickknack. You have that on your dresser. And this might be a knickknack here, see? Although that's an incense burner, you know. But do you have any knickknacks in your room? Do you have any little teddy bears or any... Oh, you have a teddy bear?
A whole zoo.
Hmm? You both do?
A whole zoo, I think.
A whole zoo. Yeah, yeah.
I have stones.
You have two teddy bears?
Stones.
Stones.
Stones, yes.
Stones.
As I walk on the beach, I just see a stone that's so shining, so brilliant. I pick it up and I just rub it and it feels good, so I bring it home.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do with it? When you bring it home?
I place it in the room in my collection.
Uh-huh.
Yes. No. There's one still in the truck, actually.
Uh-huh. And how many stones do you have now, you think?
Oh, many. Including one from the campus.
Ah, yes.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and you know the difference.
Yes, yes. I can tell where they come from. And from Lithuania.
And can you tell by the vibrations?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And what kind of stones came from Lithuania?
I don't know the name, but the nice...
I don't mean the name, but you know, what feelings are there in the stones? I'm sure they had special vibrations.
Yes, it makes me feel good inside, it makes me feel positive, and it makes me feel right.
Okay. Now, you heard what he said.
Yeah.
Now, Take Anna's hands. You.
I must take Anna's hand.
Take Anna's hand.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, now both hands. Yours. No. Now, feel her hands.
Mm-hmm.
Just feel her hands, yeah. Mm-hmm. And now, massage them as though you are gently warming her hands. Now, you're fighting the smile, Anna. Mm. Flow with it. Now, with your hands, tell her that you love her.
With my hands.
With your hands, not with your voice.
Yes.
Just with your hands. Now, is that really getting across that you love her?
Yes, sir.
You think so? Now, what do you feel, Alan? Do you feel that you're going to be sticking your foot in your mouth? when you feel that you are being loved for yourself, and not just as a public spectacle, what sort of feelings do you have? Do you feel warm?
Just as public spectacle.
Hmm? What?
I feel like it's public spectacle. I'm sorry.
Well, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. I could have Jamie and Anton do it here.
Yes. It'd be
what?
It will be real.
It'd be real?
Yes.
And now, why do you think it would be real?
Because I feel like it's real, because I know it could be real, because it's happening every day.
Now, how would we get to the point where you would feel that it was real?
I just feel it. It's like vibration. It's like it's right. You can feel it. Like you can feel vibration from the stone, from the picture. You can feel the same thing.
Now, what vibrations are you giving out that you feel this?
From Jamie and Anton, or?
No, from you on anything.
It just feel right. It just feel calm and peaceful.
Feels calm and peaceful. Okay, now, if it feels calm and peaceful, then what happens?
It makes me feel calm and peaceful.
Now, why does something outside of us want to control how we feel?
Because it was, I not only feel that it is only spectacle, I with Jamie or with Anton, it's real, because it's me.
It's you.
Nothing about what Teddy did.
Yeah.
It's what I did. Okay?
It's what you
did. Spectacle because of me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not because he did it wrong or because he
No.
did. It's because of me. I know.
All right. Now, you know that, and of course, that doesn't authorize anybody else to have other ideas. You understand?
Yeah.
But you know that. Now, if you know that, then the decision has to come in your heart of whether this is something that you really want to develop and foster, or whether you want to lay down and die. Now, I don't think you want to lay down and die. I really don't think you do. I think that you're calling this public spectacle, and of course we have three TV cameras going here and a microphone and everything, which would certainly cause it to be thought of as a spectacle. But really, I went to the hospital room of one of my people. The daughter said, "Go see my mom, because she's dying of cancer." And she's all shriveled up, and she was in her 70s, late 70s at the time. She was all shriveled up, and things were terrible. Well, I went in to see her, and I said, "Well, Irene, I hear you're dying of cancer." And she says, "Yes, I am." "But who are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm your daughter's minister." "Oh, you, I heard about you." And I said, "I hear you're dying of cancer." She says, "Well, I am. That's what the doctor told me." And I said, "Do you want to die of cancer?" And she says, "Huh, as you act as though I have a chance. I have a choice." I said, "You do." You can choose to live or die, whatever you want to do. And she says, well, I said, do you want to live or do you want to die? She says, well, of course I want to live. And I said, well, now, how much gut do you have? How much intestinal fortitude do you have? Can you go to the doctor and say, doctor, I want you to tell my family that this is a misdiagnosis about me having cancer. A misdiagnosis. And she says, but what if I don't die, what if I die? And then I had him say misdiagnosis, I said, well, what does that make to you? It's your last wish, the last wish of a dying person. And she said, well, okay, I'll do it. And so she called the doctor in and told the doctor to tell her family and everybody else, misdiagnosis. Cuckoo, cuckoo, the doctor said, to himself. But he told the family. And the family came rushing in, Grandma, Mama, wonderful, you're going to live. Oh, it's so wonderful. And, she was a tennis player and everything else, even in the 70s. And so a couple of weeks later, long after she's supposed to have been dead, her body was healing up. And about 6 weeks later, she was ready to go home because she was healthy enough. And 6 months later, she was back playing tennis. Now, we have the opportunity to play a game with you and you and you and you. And it can be for a marriage to function harmoniously or not. And if you want it to work, you have to work it. And you can't say, it's out in a spectacle or something like that. You can't say that because everything is a spectacle. With Irene, it was certainly a spectacle, And I had another man. He was one of my students' people, and she was in Chicago, and she called and she says, Herb, would you treat for Frank, I believe was his name? And I said, sure. And he's in the hospital dying of sclerosis of the liver, which means, alcohol. And so I said, sure. She told me a little about him and his family. And so I called him and I said, Frank, I hear you're dying of sclerosis of the liver. He says, who are you? I told him. He said, well, why are you talking to me? And that's very, very terrible for you to say that. And I said, it's more terrible to die, I said, do you want to live or you want to die? He says, huh, well, what difference does it make? Nobody wants me anymore. I said, I think you are the most wonderful man I have ever met in my life. You're the most noble, wonderful man. Here you are in the prime of your life, and you have a wife. He was black. And then you have a wife who is Miss Ebony, the fabulous, wonderful woman, most beautiful girl you could ever see. And your daughters, you have two daughters that are teenagers, just ready to blossom and step out and be themselves. And you are going to die and let some other man come along and take your wife and take credit for all the training that you did to bring her to where she is today, and to take credit for your daughters, all the work that you've done on your daughters, helping them be so beautiful like they are. And you're going to just give it away to somebody else. I said, you're a wonderful man. And he slammed the receiver, shut, slammed the receiver on me. And about a week later, Joyce Collins called from Chicago, and she says, Herb, what did you say to him? And I said, well, I just told him he was a foolish man to let other people take credit for his lovely family. Well, he's back with his wife now. He's contrite. He's humble. He is cured of sclerosis of the liver, and he is back and happy as can be. Now, you see, if we want these principles to work, they work. If we want the principle to be that we have a happy family, we have a family that loves each other, that gets along with each other, it'll work. I had a woman, she a nice woman, very competent, very capable. And she and her husband broke up 1972 or 3, something like that. And so she had run off with the cop, and then she decided she didn't want to be with the cop, so she told him that she wanted to be back with him, and he said, well, you've already made your decision. And she'd already emptied out the house and taken everything. And he said, now, if there's anything else you want, just take it. But after the court determines the divorce, then that's all you get. And so she went to the court, and the court gave her alimony and everything. And then she looked at her husband, and her husband was looking like this. Yeah, I'm so sorry that she has to do this, And she thought her husband was angry with her, that her husband hated her. And 20 years later, she said to her husband, well, you hated me in the courtroom. You had such a bad look. And the husband said, no, I was just frustrated. I was just confused. And she says, okay. And the husband says, well, now, what else can I do for you? I'll buy you a car. I'll buy these various things for you as you need them, take care of little things for you. But, you're no longer my wife. And so the husband did this over the years. And then the husband said, I love you. I always will love you. You're the only wife I ever had, only the wife I want. And she says, all right. And so once a month she calls up and she asks him for money to have her hair done. And he sends her money to have her hair done. And he says, okay, goodbye, I love you. And she says, goodbye. Now, in all these years, she has always said only goodbye. Never I love you, never care. And she says, how can I say I love you when, we were divorced in that way? And the husband said, well, you can say it because you mean it. I love everybody. I don't hate anybody, the husband said. And she says, well, I can't be that way yet, Well, when she can be that way, when she can, I don't want to use the word forgive, but when she can look at it from a different point of view and recognize that their marriage had been wonderful to whatever degree, and because she didn't want it to end, so it must have been okay, And when she can recognize that and start saying to her ex-husband, I love you because I love everybody, then all of the anger, all of the disgust and unhappiness of her life just fade away into nothingness. And that's quite beautiful, And of course, this is what it means to have a home. A home is where you just overlook all these things and you just be beautiful. You look for the good. The song, Look for the Silver Lining? And so, if you can look for the good in everything that goes on, pretty soon all of the little things, which seem pretty big, all the little things fade in importance, and we're no longer touched by them. We're no longer destroyed by them. But as long as we give them importance, they can destroy us and make life really, really very tough for us. So, that is as far as we can go at the moment with the home. And we will go into harmony next. You think that's a good idea? Okay.